Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Please consider supporting Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, my name is Frank Silvestri. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is very close to New Jersey, by the way. But I'm here to talk to you about why I am a Patreon supporter of Vish Khanna's Creative Control. The podcast, which hails from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, is an amazing long-form journalistic excursion into music, art, comedy, geography, and so much more. Vish is an incredible interviewer who has a charming, disarming, funny, reverently irreverent style that feels so much more like a conversation than an interview. Vish has had these conversations with some really incredible artists, including Jeff Tweedy, Nels Klein, Ira Kaplan of Yola Tango, Dan Romano, Carson McCone, the white hot lung Juliana Riolino, and of course, one of my all-time favorites, the Sadies. So if you're like me and you find these kinds of conversations important and essential, I hope you'll join me in supporting Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Leith Ross is a talented young songwriter, singer, producer, and musician currently based in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Originally from a small conservative town near Ottawa, Ontario, Ross came out after high school and now identifies as trans. Raised in a household that loves music, Ross took up songwriting and performing, studied jazz singing at college in Toronto, and released the EP Motherwell via Birthday Cake Records in the fall of 2020. They found a whole new audience during the COVID-19 pandemic after their song, We'll Never Have Sex, resonated with a large audience online, including people at Universal Music, who jointly signed them to Interscope and Republic Records. On May 19th, 2023, Republic released Ross's debut album. It's called To Learn, and it prompted Leith and I to have a talk about things like people from Ontario who move to the prairies, life in Winnipeg and why they left the Ottawa area, their musical family and early creative influences, avoiding technology and believing in boredom, the pros and cons of social media and ways to contribute to one's community, dehumanization in real life and via fame, fantastical nostalgia and regret, pondering the pandemic and touring these days, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary way that you can support this show and its work financially. So if you can and afford to and feel compelled to, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to support this podcast today. Thank you. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and very friendly people who work there who will very, very happily help you with whatever you need if you show up at one of their bricks and mortar locations. Or you can order things right from their website, blackbird.ca. Say you want to order the new Leith Ross record to learn. Well, you just go to blackbird.ca, type it in, and sure enough, they might be able to ship it right to your house. That's how it works. Again, more info at blackbird.ca. Plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 790 of Creative Control, featuring the wonderful Leith Ross with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Leith. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. It's nice to have you on the show, and thanks for asking. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, which is home base for me.
Nice. How's Winnipeg these days?
It's awesome. It's great in the summer. Winnipeg phenomena in the summer is because the winters are so long and so harsh. Everyone has a lot of fun constantly all the time for the brief 2 months that the weather is really nice.
Yeah.
So summers in Winnipeg are a good time.
Mosquitoes? You got the skeeters? Like a big...
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
And they're ferocious, right?
They are, yes. But I'm used to it. I grew up in a place with an F ton of mosquitoes as well, so...
You can curse. The mosquitoes can't hear us. Are you scared?
Fuck the mosquitoes. Like, oh. I don't know. I feel like they might hear me.
I think so, too. I got stung on my ankle bone and it's killing me. I got it like on Sunday.
Yeah. Ankle bones, joints is the worst place to be bitten.
My wife was like, why do they even do that? There's no blood. I'm like, I think there's blood. I'm pretty sure there's blood everywhere. I don't know if they're, I think they know what they're doing. Anyway, I'm in Edmonton, Alberta.
Nice.
So not too far from you. I'm from Ontario originally, but I've been here like 3 years. So I'm nice. Getting, yeah, it is cold and harsh. The prairies.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So I can't really fault the mosquitoes for like having their own fun. They have been sleeping all winter too or something probably.
That's true.
Anyway, it's nice. How long have you been in Winnipeg?
I moved to Winnipeg about a year and a half ago now.
Oh.
And I too grew up in Ontario and then moved west. Yeah.
Something to that, don't you think? The Ontarians leaving Ontario for either direction? What's going on? What's your perspective on what's going on?
The fact that over 60% of Canada's entire population is in one tiny, like, 6 hour radius.
Corridor? Yeah.
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 And I just, for me personally, I think I wanted to maybe get away from such a heavily populated area. I like smaller cities. I grew up in Ottawa, or just outside of Ottawa, actually. And then moved to Toronto and then realized that Toronto was way too fast paced for me, but didn't want to move back to my hometown, you know, as it always is, and decided to go to Winnipeg.
That's cool. And I appreciate all the things you're saying. And I think some of the subtext is it's very expensive to live in a place where lots of people are clamoring for the same scraps of land and resources. Fair enough. Yeah.
Yes. Extremely expensive. Yeah. I mean, I you can rent a like full 3-bedroom home for the same price as one room in Toronto in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I'm the same. Yeah. The same home we now own would be millions of dollars where we were. I was living in. Are you familiar with Guelph, Ontario?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, you're going to, well, maybe we'll talk about it. You're playing there soon. Have you ever been?
Yeah, I have been a couple of times, yeah. But never really spent any time, but I've heard great things about Guelph.
Yeah, I lived there 23 years.
Wow. I
started there for school and then stayed and then met my now wife there and we stayed and we loved it, but it was expensive. We couldn't move into a nicer, not even nicer, but like we have two kids. Complicated. It's very complicated. So yeah. I keep hearing about this Ontario exodus. And I also, I too have like personal reasons. I wouldn't want to live where I grew up. And I feel like all over your record, there are points of discussion about maybe why you in particular might not want to live where you used to live. And I hope we'll get into that in a moment. But Winnipeg, did you just pick a place randomly in terms of like where?
No. Yeah. I ended up in Winnipeg because I got the opportunity to work with an amazing company, Birthday Cake Media, that is based in Winnipeg, and they helped me release my first project. And then because of my connection with them, I came out to play my first ever festival, which was Harvest Moon Festival, which is a beautiful little festival that happens just outside of the city. And I just like completely fell in love. The music community is amazing. The musicians here are incredibly talented. It's not a competitive atmosphere. It's very supportive. People love working together. Everyone encourages each other. And coming from Toronto is just such a stark difference. And it just like made me feel so enamored with actually doing music as a career. I was like, okay, if it can be like this, then I'm down.
Yeah.
Instead of feeling like that, yeah, kind of like fast-paced, harsh, competition-y vibe that can sometimes exist in Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's good.
And then I moved.
Have you come across John K. Sampson or Christine Fellows, these sorts of people?
Yes, of course.
Oh, you have? Good. Yes, of course. Like, you never know. You may.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't, like, personally met them, but I like, it's like the Winnipeg music circle is so beautiful and small. And so obviously I'm a fan and it's kind of, you know, everybody, you're never more than one person away, really.
If you need help connecting with those two people, they're dear friends of mine. I can connect you if you like. Just let me know.
Yeah. I love that.
I love them so much. Christine was on the show about whenever that last record came out, a year and a half ago. Something like that. And yeah, I love them. So that's great. I think Winnipeg's great. You've alluded to this Ontario town you're from. You said near Ottawa. Where do you mind specifying? Every time I hear near Ottawa, I think of Wakefield.
True.
That's my experience. I used to play in bands and we'd always play the Black Sheep Inn and hang out in Wakefield. We stayed at the Black Sheep Inn, which was...
Hell yeah. I love Wakefield.
It was a bit strange. Everyone told us it was haunted. And we were like, that checks out. It felt a little haunted. Anyway, sorry.
Black Sheep Inn is an awesome venue, though. I've only gone one time, but it just got a certain je ne sais quoi about it.
I loved it. I loved every gig we played. I thought the feelings were good and people would come out and all that kind of stuff. But whereabouts are you from?
It's a place called Manotick.
Oh, okay.
So it's southwest-ish of Ottawa, and about like half an hour on the highway.
Okay. Yeah, I know of it. I don't know that I've been there. Yeah.
Not many. I mean, it's like sometimes people go for like daytime tourism kind of a vibe because it's like there is like one quaint little street. But I mean, it's one of the more conservative ridings in the entire country. Yeah. The arsehole snake man who is currently the head of the Conservative Party. That's his riding. So I grew up in Pierre Poilievre's fucking riding. So that is like, it is a beautiful physically place, but that is always like looming above the atmosphere of the village.
Yeah. For the listeners of this show who don't know Canada very well, this Pierre fellow is about the oiliest politician we've had in some time and far right and posturing and I don't think has really a... Anyway, I don't want to rant about politics necessarily, but he doesn't seem that... And it's bad. I can see why you would want to get out. My understanding, though, is despite that and the conservative nature of the writing, your family life was pretty good, right? You enjoyed it.
Yes, it was amazing. My parents are incredible. Yeah. My siblings are amazing. I actually had a wonderful childhood, which is what every child deserves, but I do feel especially grateful for having that upbringing. It was filled with music and dancing and fun and good stuff.
But your family, it was filled with music, but your parents, I believe, weren't particularly musical themselves. Is that correct?
My dad loved to get out the guitar once a week on Friday and play like the five songs that he knows. My mom, and they both can hold a tune beautifully. Like, we love singing together. Both of my grandfathers on both sides are like true, you know, like storytelling musicians. Are very passionate about it. They play a lot. My late grandfather on my mom's side was one of those incredible men who played like six instruments but didn't know how to read music. Like, couldn't really tell you what chord he was playing, but could play it on anything because his ear was just that good. Like, they are like incredible musicians. So in that sense, it's like, you know, almost skipped a generation, but both my parents got a little bit of that.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm kind of reciting some official bio lines. But now that we've dug deeper, I mean, I think if their parents, your parents' parents, were musical, then osmosis-wise, like, they had an affinity for music, even if they didn't play professionally. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Yeah, I would say mostly they were just music listeners and music lovers in that sense. Like, but they could definitely hold a tune.
Nice.
And yeah.
Now, your grandfathers that were players, would we know them? Did they appear on recordings or anything like that?
No. It was my grandfather on my mom's side, who is Tommy. It's a song that I have called Tommy. That's about him. He's just like, I mean, he played in a lot of like little open mics or folk clubs. But most of his musical life was just like being a storytelling Scot. He just like played all the old Scottish and Irish traditional tunes that he knew all the time and told us stories about them and that kind of a thing. And then, on my dad's side, coming from more of a like farming, working class folk background, or it was a similar vibe. He was like playing old folk tunes and telling us stories. But most of it was, you know, all of it, I guess, was sort of just in the house.
But you were around you got to see your grandparents, your granddads, I suppose. You got to see them play or be around them when they played?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah, all the time.
Sorry, I'm not, this is not like I'm solving a case. I'm just trying to piece together because I didn't have as much, like, there was music in my house, but it was often Indian music and my parents weren't very encouraging of me. Like, I'm a drummer primarily and they weren't that encouraging of it, but it sounds like you had full encouragement and exposure to family members playing music. And I imagine it's probably safe to say that inspired you to play.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, well, I mean, it like literally was my first experiences with learning songs. Like, my grandpa would teach me old songs that he knew. And so I was like, my first experience with performing and with singing and with trying to play instruments, and also just like my first experience with really like loving music and like seeing it for what I think is like now what I now believe to be the most important part of it, which is just like a way to experience community and a way to experience like connection to other people, especially people that you love. Yeah.
No, that's lovely. That's the best you can hope for. What kinds of songs were your granddad's playing or and beyond that, like, what other musicians sort of grabbed your ear beyond just the ones in your family? Just curious about the sort of influences and inspirations. Could you cite some?
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely try. As soon as I get asked this question, I forget everything I've ever heard. But my grandpa, my Scottish grandfather was just like predominantly old Irish traditionals or Scottish traditionals, like really old tunes where you don't know who wrote them.
Yeah,
they're beautiful. Sometimes I don't even know the name, but I know all the words. And then a lot of like old country, Kris Kristofferson. And Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson and stuff on my dad's side. And so that was like the main things that were being played around the house when I was young. And then when I kind of got a little bit older, the CDs that like my mom would put on that then I would like steal and take to my room was like John Prine, India Arie, Corinne Bailey Ray, out of James. Yeah, there was kind of a little bit of everything, but it was also like, I didn't have, my parents were a bit anti-technology. So I didn't have access to the internet until I got my first iPod, which was like in high school, I think almost. So the other thing is that I did mostly have my parents' music taste for most of my upbringing. And now looking back on it, I'm grateful that they have a great music taste.
It sounds like heavy hitters in terms of songwriters and singers there that you had access to. May I ask why they were anti-technology?
I think they just were nervous about like it taking away our creativity, or they strongly believed in boredom and the magic that can come out of being bored. Like when you're bored, you have to come up with something to do, and it fires up those very special parts of your brain.
That makes sense.
And now that I'm older, I like really agree with them. And I'm very grateful actually that I didn't get like smartphones and things when my peers did, because I think it was honestly an important part of like me writing songs a lot from a young age, because I was always bored and I was, you know, I wanted to be creative and I was like just getting into it. And I think it like really helped push me to do it.
Do you utilize that interest in being bored when you're on the road to help you? Most people, when they're on the road and they're traveling, touring, it's like, put a comedy record on, put on a record. I got a book to read. I'm going to play a video game on my phone or whatever. Do you actually are like, no, I want nothing. I want something to happen. I want to be bored. What kind of traveler are you at this point?
I have the opposite thing. On the road, it's like so intense and emotional. And I find it really, really difficult to tour just like because of the way that I am. So when I have a free second, I actually do want to be distracted so I can't think about how much I'm going through.
Right.
It's when I get home that then I delete all my social media and I get rid of any distractions. And then I force myself to be bored, because then I have like the time and space to like process stuff that's happened to me. I have the, like, I can actually sit down and write a song if I want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You must have an interesting relationship with social media generally, because if I understand things correctly, and luckily you're here, so you can help me understand things correctly. The internet has played a big role. Social media has played a big role in your ascent as an artist in recent years. True or false, Leith, is what I'm saying accurate?
Very true. Very true.
So do you have, like I do now, and I think like a lot of, as we're speaking, the love-hate relationship with social media is a really complicated thing, because as we're speaking, some of the things are crumbling. There seems to be a new thing every week to replace the one thing that's crumbling. And what people are experiencing is either some semblance of good, I'm glad it's all falling apart, or, oh no, what am I going to do? I have a career because of this. I connect with people because of this, particularly in this, I think, still quasi-strange world of you know, some people are remote. Like you and I are not in the same city, but we're using a thing and we can see each other. And I know we're not the only ones. So do you have any philosophical perspective on where we're at and where you're at with the internet and its platforms and things like that?
I do. And it's something I think about and I talk about a lot with my peers and with my friends. But I think most of my philosophy on social media and the internet can like span over all the different kind of sections of it. Like there's the business perspective, like where it's literally an efficient tool for helping to promote yourself, especially if you're an artist, but also, you know, it's also entered into basically every other kind of business as well.
Yes.
But then also like just personal social relationships, a relationship to things like activism, to like being political, all that stuff. Like I have a pretty similar opinion about all of those things, which is that in general, you know, I think it's a miraculous tool that we've developed and that it can be quite useful. But my deep belief is that it's overused and that in most of those areas, it's more of a hindrance than it is a help.
Yeah.
Especially for like the individual person, like, you know, in the area of like activism and, you know, being political and stuff, accessing something through social media is so much less likely to be effective than doing it in real life. But because we can do it through online, we don't go out and do it in real life. So there's like this insane decrease in like people doing physical work, physical action, and more like reposting something on their story. And it goes from like, you know, being actually involved in something to, like, as long as you are seen to be involved in something, that's what matters. Right. And that frustrates me. And then it's the same thing with music. Like, you know, it is amazing that we can use this as a tool to access other people, and there can be some incredible communities online. But again, I think it takes away from the experience of, like, learning from the elders in your genre and hearing their stories, their very important life stories and musical stories. It takes away from, like, forming a real bond with people that are doing the same thing as you. It takes away from, like, sometimes a more effective business strategy, which is, like, actually going out into the world and meeting people and knowing them deeply and in an important way. And all those things, I feel like it's just, it can be good, but I think we lean on it way too much. And the way that we depend on it is detracting from what we could be doing.
That's really well said. I would agree with you on that level. And I also, I think some of it can point out where other people who are, you know, have access to changing things aren't doing enough of it. I mean, particularly with media, like, I feel like I know everyone thinks they get the real news from social media, and that can be a dangerous thing too. But I do feel like I learn more about what's actually happening. Like, it seems like the media companies are a week behind. Oh yeah, I heard about that already from that scientist. Yeah. I don't know. I don't actually know that scientist. They seem to have a lot of followers, but they already said that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And now you're finally reporting on it. So it's really confusing. Anyway, we're not experts. I don't think we're going to resolve this, but I really appreciate what you had to say, because I do sometimes think as I sit in my office that I'm not doing enough. I know I'm not doing what I used to be doing.
Yeah.
In sort of community work. I also moved to a place and immediately 2 months later is a pandemic. So, like, I don't even know who to talk to anymore. I talk to people like you every week. And I feel like, I'm engaging, but am I? I don't know.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I'm having the same struggle, like, every day. It's very confusing, and it's super hard to break out of it, because it's like, feels like everything in the world now is kind of accessible through your phone.
Yes. But is that good or not? I can't tell. I feel informed.
Yeah.
You said activism, I think, and political. I feel like these are sort of buzzwords for being well informed, and I don't see, like, some of it is. I mean, there's the actual practical thing of doing something, but, like, I don't know. I feel like every time I say something, someone's like, you worry too much. I'm like, no, I just read a thing.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, I just know a thing because someone said it. I don't think I'm that worried.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I should be.
The other thing about that too, that I think is really important to acknowledge is the fact that, like, when there is such a thing as, like, knowing too much about injustices that happen in the world, because it doesn't actually lead you to action. It makes you feel like you can't do anything. Like, when I go on social media and I see, like, a million things that are going wrong, then it creates this, like, feeling, of just, like, hopelessness and listlessness. Like, I feel like I can't do anything. Whereas the beautiful thing about, like, caring about people and getting involved with something pre-social media, or even now people who don't use social media, it's like, if you see something on your story and you become aware of it by seeing something on an Instagram story, you're like, oh, that's interesting, now I know that thing. Whereas if you learn about something from a person in real life who's telling you about it, there is almost always an action that follows that, because they learned about it from another real person that they know, and on Wednesdays they meet at this bar and they do harm prevention training.
Right.
So then it's like it's like an immediate avenue into a real community that does real action, that participates in real things in the place that you live, which then also is so empowering, because it's not like, oh no, there's this big nebulous thing I can't do anything about. It's more like, oh, there's a person on my block down the street where if I go do this thing on Thursday, I can actually materially help them.
Right.
And then that makes you feel so much better about doing things that are a bit further away from you too, like donating to stuff online, participating in mutual aid. Anyway, so that's what I just like, that's what I want for the younger generation of people who seem to like really care so much about it, but then like also don't have a way into the actual physical communities that they occupy or like that they partake in.
Yeah.
And I think that it would get better a little bit if they weren't accessing all of it through social media.
I think that's, again, that's well said. And I would agree with you. You've had the interesting experience, I think, of a song of yours getting a lot of steam online. And that, I think, maybe I'm wrong about this, please correct me, I think that has thrust you into the real world in a different context than you had prior to it. So this is an example of almost exactly what you're talking about, except you have the experience of like, oh shit, I actually now have to go out into the world and meet my people, meet the people who have that song has resonated with all these people. And now I have this career potentially because of it. So what's that been like? Are you like, oh no, I have to go out into the world all the time now? Or are you like, finally, great. This song being online has actually brought me into the world and I can help people with my music or something like that. Can you talk about maybe what I'm asking you is that before and after feeling, if you can articulate that still of this song kind of blowing up and your life, I think, changing? Is that overblown or no?
Oh yeah. No. Okay. Not at all.
Can you talk about that dichotomy of like pre blow up versus how you're actually feeling about this? I know it can be heady.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, another thing that I've been thinking about a lot for sure. I think like first, I mean, it is amazing. It's incredible. I'm so lucky. It's almost entirely luck and circumstance. And, you know, I know that's not to diminish that I wrote the song and that I may be talented, but just like any other person is also talented. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, it's just like different intersections of things that might make you able to be successful on an app like TikTok.
Yes.
But anyway, mainly I do feel grateful when I really think about it. But there was a strange thing that happened where there was an assumption that it was just entirely incredible and that, you know, this is what everybody dreams of. This is what everybody aims for.
Yeah.
When in reality, when it happened, I was having a very different feeling, which was just like intense fear and the weight of a responsibility that I had no time to prepare for. Like having that many people paying attention to your life and listening to what you say is a gift in the sense that now I can live and support myself. But in almost every other way, other than like being able to help people, it is sort of a confusing and sometimes horrible experience where it's just like, it's an important responsibility that you kind of didn't really ask for. Like I asked to be a musician, but I didn't ask to be kind of like a, I don't know, like a public figure in
public
some
person,
ways,
yeah.
Which,
yeah.
And for my life to kind of be public information in some senses. And it's inevitably going to be a complicated feeling. But the main thing that I always land back on is like disbelief that anybody truly enjoys it. Because the feeling of like having any kind of power over another human being is not a good one. It's one of the worst things I've ever experienced in my life. And it's such a confusing thing to go through because everybody knows deep down that they're no less or more important than any other person on the planet.
Yeah.
And so it's like you have to somehow bring those two things together, like, you know, understand that and then have to live through this experience of like just sort of being dehumanized and not in like a malicious way, but just in like a circumstance of capitalism and the way that the music industry functions. Yeah. I don't know. It's like an intensely complicated feeling and a lot to think about and a huge responsibility. And I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, no, I totally appreciate what you're saying. So I wasn't specific enough. I believe the song that I was alluding to is We'll Never Have Sex.
Yeah.
That was the song that kind of blew up, right? It's interesting to hear you talk about how some measure of fame and public profile has left you feeling particularly dehumanized. I wonder if it's possible to compare that sensation with the, I think, a really similar sensation that I see in, like, when I read your lyrics, which are wonderful, or I listen to you singing so impassioned, like you sound like someone who's going through that of not knowing yourself, maybe not even knowing who your real friends are. That comes up a lot for me as I ponder these songs, because this notion of predators and arts communities, sorry, I'm going to jump around here a little bit.
Yeah.
Please forgive me. There's a lot of stuff swimming around on this record and in your work, but this notion of predators in the arts community, it, for some reason, it's particularly complicated for some people. It's not just this person is terrible. As you say in a song, I think it's guts.
Yeah.
Oh, I like playing with that guy. So that trumps any other thing that they may have said or done. We've all, I don't know if everyone has experienced this, but I've certainly become more familiar with this notion of like something comes to light and we're like, what do we do?
Yeah.
This linchpin of the community or this person that plays in five bands, what do we do with this? The answers seem so obvious, but it's very complicated. They're not moving away. They're not doing... Anyway, sorry, I'm really all over the place with this. I want to stick to the point of the question. This dehumanization of yourself, but also of people in our sector, in our community, it seems to ring true for you. And I don't, again, mean to keep asking you to A, B experiences.
Yeah.
But you're someone, I think, who's already sung and written and thought about what it means to be dehumanized. Now you're going through it in a different way. Can we figure out a way to connect those two versions of yourself who is already struggling with what it meant to be a person, I think, and be in your community? And now this, your community has just gotten bigger and you feel even less like a person somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if what my question is exactly, but could you, do you relate to what I'm saying on some level?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's just different scales of the same thing, which is how they're connected, where it's like in the case of being a part of a smaller music community and potentially there is a person who's doing harm or whatever. And then like my experience was coming forward about that and not being supported, not like, you know, being held by that community in any way or protected. And in that scenario, you know, I think it's like almost a coping mechanism for the people who are in the periphery of that to dehumanize you. Because it's like, if I really think about how complicated you are and how much of a person you are and how hurt you are, then I'm going to feel bad. So what I'll do is I'll dehumanize you. And then, you know, in this scale of things too, it's more of a symptom of like just the way that we're taught to interact with people that we don't personally know, that we maybe have a parasocial relationship with, I think is a function of the same protective kind of instinct of like, well, if I really think about you as a complicated person and all the ways that you are good and bad and, you know, like the way that you are just as flawed as me and just as awesome, then I'll have to reckon with that within myself too. And I'll have to maybe change my behavior towards you. And so it's like this, like almost like a protection thing. And I think where I struggle so much is like, I think maybe it's just like the kind of social time that we're living in. But, in all of those scenarios, in my opinion, like radically humanizing people is the best way to go about it, including maybe the person who's doing the harm in the music community, including the artist and the listener, like where it's just like, it's always so much more nuanced than a person being good, being bad. And the most effective way to deal with any of these scenarios is just like a focus on harm reduction and on care and, you know, like finding the root of the problem and trying to address that. But you're right. There, it's a similar feeling. It's the same sort of feeling of like having your autonomy and your humanity taken away from you because other people can't deal with it being big and complicated and hard to understand. And I think I've fallen into the same trap of doing that myself, as we all have with other people too, where it's just like, it's easier for me to see you as one thing than it is to see you as complicated. But in the end, it always feels better to do the latter.
Yeah. Like as I ponder some of your lyrics, you are trying to address people, but the anger is so high that there's a lot of violence in this too, which is in itself can be dehumanizing and as a way of just like, well, not really though. Sorry. I'm struggling with this too. There's some gore in your lyrics. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of body stuff. I can't, guts keeps coming up. A lot of visceral sickness in my stomach, which is, you know, that's interesting. I feel like you're trying to connect to your body through these songs, trying to figure it out, and other bodies when you talk about hitting someone so hard that they're going to end up a bloody lump on the floor.
Yeah.
That's really complicated stuff. I mean, what is your relationship to physicality? Sorry, I feel like we're talking about some of the same things in a different way, like this remote virtual relationships, but then to actually see someone and have that visceral reaction, good or bad, butterflies in your stomach or bile I mean, I feel like those things, you oscillate between those two quite a bit on this record, would you say?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So that connection to the biological reaction that someone might have in your position, where do you suppose that emanates from as a songwriting? I think it's a constant songwriting image of like physicality and humanization, but also, like I say, some of the anger gets into, frankly, death and destruction. Like, these are not light topics. Where do you suppose that comes from in terms of your songwriting influences even?
I mean, I think that it's the, like, old as all art phenomena of, like, you can access and talk about feelings, thoughts, desires, and things through art, through poetry, through song that you would never, ever act upon in real life. And it's one of our only outlets for, like, acknowledging those things in ourselves. And it's honestly, in some strange way, like a beautiful exercise in kind of emotional regulation and like not taking things out on people in real life. I feel like so often I write things into songs that I really needed to talk about and I really needed to get out. But in reality, I wouldn't ever bring that to the person that I wrote it about because I don't think it's worth it or important. But it is something that I felt. So I think so many of my lyrics about a specific situation are all the things that I wouldn't actually be able to say in conversation with that person. All the things that like I feel and that I feel very like viscerally and very physically in the way that my body holds stuff without ever actually having to say it to anybody at all. And then, you know, a year passes before the recording comes out. And so the situation's less relevant anyway.
I don't know why, but I, as I ponder some of your lyrics, some of them, I feel like it's someone who's entering adulthood looking back on their teenage self quite a bit. Is that fair?
Yes.
Is that a lot of it?
Yes. I would say that almost 100% of my discography so far is like has a coming of age theme. And I feel like actually only now am I kind of like moving away from nostalgia in my writing.
That's an interesting term you just used. Use nostalgia, but I hear a lot of regret. When you talk about being someone who can't say a thing to someone, but you can say that same thing to them in a song. And in your case, I don't know how far out of high school you are at the moment. I'm going to guess 5-6 years.
Yeah, I'm closer to like seven years, I think.
Okay. Wow. I don't even know you. We never met.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing. So you're 7 years out and you're having a midlife moment of where did I come from and what should I, cause I sometimes, to put myself to sleep, I will like set myself up in scenarios from high school. Oh, I should have said this. Oh, I should have hit that basketball shot. Oh, if only. And I put myself in that fantastical mode. But what is it about high school is so weird. It's so formative. I get it. But you're in this weird zone in some of your songs where I can tell you're nostalgic, but you wish you were. Nostalgia is weird. Sometimes we get nostalgic and we want to go back. We wish we could go back to where we were. But sometimes you're nostalgic because you're like, aha, I could back to the future of the situation and change who I was as a teen. If I knew then what I know now kind of swirls around. And I feel like that's a major component of some of your songwriting, that feeling of regret. And I wish I'd said this and now I could say that, but of course it's too late. Is any of that swirling around in your work?
I mean, yes. And I think, I think that the end feeling when I listen back to it is kind of that feeling of like, oh, if only things had been different. But in reality, ironically, my personal philosophy about things that have already happened has never really changed since I was a really little kid, because it was one of my parents' most enthusiastic teachings, is that anything that's happened to you, good or bad, it's like that classic thing where it's like you wouldn't be who you are, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing if they hadn't happened to you.
Yeah.
And so mostly when I'm looking back on things, it comes from more of that place in nostalgia that's like, that longing for a feeling that wasn't even real when it was there.
Fantastical. It seems fantastical.
Yeah,
it doesn't. Yes. It doesn't seem real. And I want to be careful about this because I know I was just speaking with an artist whose work is a little gauzy, like it's a little hazy, and their voice is like kind of I don't know, airy. And I said to them, I bet you get tagged with being like called dreamy, you know, like dreamlike. And she was like, yes. And I quickly said, I'm not saying that, you know, I got out of it. But my point is, I think some of what I was just describing could be applicable to you. There's a little bit of a haze, an ambience to the way your voice is very beautiful. And it kind of, takes me away, but it puts me in that dreamy state. Is that resonating with you? And if so, is that purposeful on your part to kind of create this fantastical sound even?
Yeah, I think it's not consciously purposeful, but looking back on, or like thinking from about my songwriting from a like sort of more removed perspective, and also thinking about my influences really young and also all of my favorite musicians and my favorite songs, I think that I have always been enamored with this element of music where I love listening to horribly devastating songs that are beautiful, because I think when something is beautiful and in the form of a song, I am able to process what it's about without feeling distressed, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
When I watch, I can't watch sad movies. I can't watch sad TV shows. I can't really read sad books because it actually literally devastates me, ruins my week because I just get so sad and I think about it too much. But songs, something about it being in that format allows me to access like the deepest, darkest, most destructive elements of humanity and still feel inspired to be better and do better afterwards instead of feeling kind of like distraught. And I think because I've always been so obsessed with music's ability to do that for me, I do try to do that in my own music as well, even if sometimes it's not conscious. I think I like addressing things that are really hard to talk about and putting it in a format that is very easily consumable. And then even like big philosophical concepts too, which I love writing about and I always have put into like a little song with three chords and a very uncomplicated melody, because I think it's like such a fantastic and easy-ish thing to hold in the human mind. It's easier than if you were just to read it.
Well, there's a couplet in Music Box that I think is relevant to what we're just talking about. Oh, the places in your dreams, are they fiction or memory? Sorry, that just stuck with me as like a, like, I mean, I think it's quite, appropriate for what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You seem to have this, I think unlike some people who would look back on their past and feel like, well, I was a different person then. I feel like you in particular could maybe really say that. Cause I sometimes think you're looking at yourself in the past and realizing you didn't know who you were on some level yet. And you were trying to figure it out. Like, do you look at yourself objectively as being like, oh my God, I didn't even know who I was. It's not just like, I didn't ask that person out or I wish I'd studied harder on that biology exam. You literally, like, I think, is it, am I overstepping to suggest that like, you almost are like, I can't almost relate. I can relate to that person, but I'm so much different and I'm so much more aware of who I am now. Does that resonate?
Yeah, absolutely. I as much as I love the concept or like the, I have a deep love for the knowledge that I have always been myself. I do feel entirely disconnected sometimes with versions of me that no longer exist. And I think it can be a bit of a miraculous thing because it makes me kinder to myself. Because I'm so much more capable of being kind to other people than I am of being kind to myself. So when a past version of myself is closer in my mind to being a different person than it is to being me, then I'm able to look at that person and be more forgiving of them and be more understanding of their choices and like see them as a complicated person instead of a flawed version of myself.
I'm happy to hear you say that. I think regret, we can be too hard on ourselves when we regret things.
Totally. Yeah. Well, and I think this concept is basically exactly what I wrote the song to learn about. It's like looking back on myself in the couple of years prior to writing that song and seeing myself as something different. And then for the first time being like very kind to that version of myself where it's like, oh, well, you did a bunch of stupid things and a bunch of smart things and a bunch of just random things, but inevitably there was just like so much incredible like learning going on, and all of those mistakes that you made were like a beautiful little human growing up and starting to understand things that they didn't before.
In that song that you were just referring to, I don't know if you meant to be alluding to these particular lines. When I've been cruel, I've taken up self-hatred, procrastinating pains of finally seeing myself. I will say, like, so I don't know you, Leith. We just met. but I will also say this, and I don't want to get too heavy. As I ponder what you're singing about and how you're singing it, I also have concern for you as a human being. Has anyone close to you who knows you well, reached out and said, hey, like these songs are heavy and too much time in my house alone, by the way. Like I'm sorry. I don't know you. I don't want to get too personal or pry, but are you okay? Like I do feel like I listen to this. Yeah. I'm like, this person are they okay? Like there's so much wit and joy in this on some level, but I have this. Every time I hear your record, I hope Leith is okay. Are you okay? Are you all right? I don't mean to be facetious either. I am genuinely.
No.
It comes through.
Yeah. I mean, no and yes. And I think that is the rub. It's very like, and by the way, no, you are not the only one. When I write a song and I like, because I love when I'm off the road, I do like posting on TikTok or Instagram or whatever and just sharing things as soon as I write them.
Yeah.
Because I think it's like a cool, it's cool that we can do that now.
Mm-hmm.
But I like, it's not uncommon for me to post something and my mom to call me 15 minutes later and be like, okay, are you all right?
Yeah. So I'm not and mishearing things.
No, not at all. No? It's I'm always more okay than my lyrics suggest.
Yeah.
Because it is me grappling with the darkest thoughts that I have.
Yeah.
But they are an indicator of what is truly going on with me psychologically. Yeah. And I think the new record in particular was written like in my mind, the progression of the record is like the really dark stuff too. Like at the end there, bringing in many notes of optimism, kindness, good stuff again. And so I think that record in particular is like, wow, Leith is not okay, but maybe they are learning how to be okay by the end there.
I was going to ask if you're the type of artist who can have like a therapeutic experience with your practice. Like, do you write a song or a record and at the end of it feel like, oh shit, A, I've learned a bunch of stuff about myself that I wasn't really sure about, and B, I think I feel better. I think I feel better expressing that. Are you one of either of those things?
Hell yeah. I mean, that's, I think, my main relationship to writing music. The way that I write music is very intense. Like, most of the songs that I've written came out in, like, max 2 hours, and then I don't really touch them after I finish them. And the process is kind of like, I have an insanely strong feeling about something, and I want to learn more about what I'm feeling and why I'm feeling it so much. So I write a song. And, you know, in most times it's just like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that I felt that way. It feels really good to figure that out and to get that out. And then sometimes, especially with some of the harder topics, like especially a couple of the songs in particular I can think of on the new record, it's like a life-changing experience where it's like maybe an hour and a half of I'm like crying, like sobbing, and I'm like just having like, it feels like a million epiphanies like all in one go, and it's so emotional that I'm bawling my eyes out, and then I have another epiphany about something else, and all this time I'm like writing it and trying to sort through those feelings. And when that happens at the end of it, it literally feels like everything is different. Like it's like, I don't know, it's just like an incredibly intense experience, and is definitely my main way of coping with the world.
Well, you sound like a human being. And that's good, but I appreciate what you're saying. There are extremes in our daily lives, but, you know what? Hearing you say that makes me feel better. Cause I've lost artists I love, in all sorts of ways. And, it just concerns me. I'm at an age where I'm like, I'm a parent. Maybe that's what it is. I'm like, you okay? Yeah. Everybody. Yeah. All right. Like, let's just make sure everything's cool, man. And so, like that's where I was coming from. I didn't mean to pry. So thank you for speaking to that. On that topic, and before we start to wind down here, you have describe the fact that you have a, you feel like you have a responsibility to people as a public person now. Have you found that your music, like, have you heard from people who have said your music helps them or has been, saved them or some words to that effect? Have you had any experiences like that?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Yeah. I've had a lot, and it never gets less, I don't know what the word would be, like, humbling, or I don't know, the craziness of that feeling never diminishes, no matter how many times it happens that you could have ever had a positive effect on a person's life that you didn't know.
Yeah.
It's like the best thing that's ever happened to me, probably, that I can be helpful to people who I've never gotten the chance to speak to.
That's lovely. And I appreciate that that's a part of this responsibility of being a public person that you seem to have a lot of gratitude for.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've finished this record. Obviously, it's been out. It's been circulating. It's acclaimed, all those sorts of things. Have you begun working on something else, something new?
Yeah. I am arranging some recording sessions right now. And I'm also just a pretty constant writer. So in the next week or so, actually, my job for myself is to sort through my hundreds of voice memos and Google Drive links and pick the things that I really want to record. And then I've also been writing a lot of new songs in the last couple of weeks. So yeah, the new project is definitely in its beginning stages.
That's great. And do you feel like in your initial stages, like, is the kind of fantastical past that we've been describing, is it still proving to be fodder, stuff you have to work through and write about?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. But there is a slightly more of a theme, kind of like what I was saying before. For the first time in my life, I'm maybe moving away from nostalgia a tiny bit, where I find myself writing more about what it's like to be alive right now as me, and not kind of what it's like to think about how I used to feel. And also a lot of looking forward. I think, like, before, when I pictured, you know, a perfect scenario, I would think about my childhood. And now when I try to calm myself down by picturing a perfect scenario, I think about myself in 50 years, like on a farm with my dearest friends and companions, and we have a vegetable garden.
That's optimism. That's great. Thinking about that. Yeah. Yeah. You have to, that's great. That's wonderful to hear. You've done some touring, since the record came out, and you've got more coming, I believe, in the next little while. In a general sense, do you like touring? What's it like touring right now, given sort of the weirdness in the world? Is it okay?
Yeah, but I do wish people cared more about the weirdness in the world.
Yeah.
People who are attending shows. It does feel a bit ridiculous to me that, in general, people are not very forgiving about, like, my audiences, I think, are very forgiving about live shows, but I've seen a shift recently in sort of, like, you know, public discussion about, like, if I pay money for your tickets, then you should show up, kind of a thing.
Right.
But then also nobody wears a mask.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's very like, okay, well, there's like a actual pandemic where if I got this thing, I wouldn't be able to perform for you anymore. But then, and you'd be mad at me. Not my audiences, but I don't think, but then also you don't make an effort to protect me and the other people in this space. And it's also for me a lot about, disability justice. Like I've had a lot of fans who have messaged being like, you know, hey, are people actually wearing masks to the shows? Cause if they aren't, I literally can't come, that kind of a thing. And I have to be like, you know, I've told people again and again to do that. But no, if I'm being honest with you, at least 50% of the crowd is not masked.
Yep.
And then people are literally kept from live music, which is so unfair. So yeah, I mean, it's a complicated time to be moving around the world. And, it's also just like a complicated social climate. But I'm very grateful to be able to be on the road, to be in a position where I'm not endangering myself or the people that I work with, you know, as much as someone else might be endangered. I struggle with touring for different reasons, where it's just like, I'm a big homebody and I just want to like wake up and make an omelet and kiss my cats on the head, you know?
Yeah.
And I prefer being home, but That's a whole other.
It seems to me that you and I are both on the same page in life in lots of ways. It's a somewhat sad page, but we're on the same page. So
yeah.
you're not the only one feeling this way. Okay, just to wrap this up, a couple of things. One, if people want to kind of, I know we've talked about whether or not you want people to engage with you, but if people want to engage with you on various things, the websites, whatnot, is there anywhere you'd like to direct them particularly?
I have a personal email that I really like to check and that I sometimes respond to. It's dearleafross@gmail.com.
Okay.
That has been really great for me, especially when I'm off social media, to get have a personal interaction, but it's not a comment. And then other than that, I don't know. I generally do respond if I think that, you know, if it's worth it for me to respond, I suppose.
Yeah. All right. That's good. So the email. No one's ever said, go to my email. Everyone's check out my... That's great. That's excellent. Thank you, Lee.
I mean, if you want news about shows and stuff, then Instagram is probably the best place to be. But if someone wants to talk to me personally, the email is the best.
No, that's lovely. I'm telling you, it's great. I've never had that happen. That's fantastic. All right. If we can go out on a song from this record to give people a sense of what we've been talking about, what would you pick and why?
Maybe given what we talked about, I would pick the title track, To Learn. We referenced it a couple of times, and I also think it's a pretty good encapsulation of a couple of the things that we've touched on.
I would agree, and it's a wonderful song. So let's go to it now. Sure. This is the title track from this wonderful record, To Learn, by Leith Ross. Leith, this was, I hope, for you, a pleasure. It was a pleasure for me. I thank you so much for this time, and I hope we speak again, and best of luck in the future.
Thank you so much. So nice to talk to you, too.
What can I say? I'm learning to lie, but I'm living to learn what to lie about. I'm losing again from holding too tight, but I'm living to lose what I can do without. I've played a few games where no score could be fitting, but I'm learning when winning's just not worth the sport. And I've been so ashamed that I've run like the wind, but I'm learning about giving up and sparing the worst. Self-hatred, procrastinating pains of finally seeing myself. But when I looked on the truth and it bloomed for all its patience, there was ugliness and shame, but there was something else. What can I say? I'm learning to die, but I'm living.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You know, it's a thrill, it's an honor, it's I don't even know what else to say. It's just nice to meet people and talk to people for the first time via the show. I just want to convey that because it means a lot to me. Thanks for listening to it. Because if no one else was listening, it would be pretty self-indulgent, if I might say. So it's nice. It's nice to have these conversations and share them with you and meet new people, as I did with Leith Ross. I just want to thank Leith Ross again for appearing on this, the 790th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it everywhere and you don't know where it is, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook. You can follow the show on Twitter at Vish Creative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and Instagram and Blue Sky and whatever else, at Vish Khanna or whatever the sites that you, they all have different things now. You'll find me generally at Vish Khanna. That's where I am. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation. Keep this podcast going. $6 or more a month grants you access to exclusive content. You get episodes earlier than everybody else. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, just message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. I want to thank Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about at blackbird.ca. They're very supportive of this show and they've got bricks and mortar locations in Calgary and Edmonton, Alberta. But yeah, you can order stuff directly from their website there, blackbird.ca. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on the show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Leith Ross. I hope you enjoyed it and learned stuff about Leith. I don't think they do a ton of interviews, so I hope you enjoyed that, and I hope you'll consider subscribing to this podcast or following it and asking your friends to do the same. I will talk to you very soon. I must go. Be well. Bye for now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.